Today's program has been brought to you by Hearst Ranch, the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. For more information, visit HearstRanch.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
Everybody, welcome to episode 2 of Sharp and Hot with me, Chef Emily Peterson, brought to you on HeritageRadioNetwork.org, broadcasting from Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. In this episode, we are going to discuss canning distant fruit, acknowledging and hopefully breaking a soda addiction, how to eat meat, and why Twitter hates me. Let's start with that one. Maybe Twitter doesn't actually hate me, but it feels that way. Last week, if you were listening in, I asked you to follow me at sharpandhot.com, or sharpandhot, rather, just at sharpandhot. And I went to log back in on my Twitter account, and Twitter said no. Twitter said you forgot your password. And said, oh, okay, so I understand that. So I sent them my email address, and they sent me back how to reset my password, and it didn't work. So I sent it again, and it didn't work, and it didn't work. And so I'm really angry at Twitter right now. So forget everything I ever said about following at Sharp and Hot. It is dead to me, even though it is obviously me, and it says that it is obviously me. I guess, you know, the concern is that I might be trying to post naked pictures of Katy Perry or whatever. But that's, you know, neither here nor there. So forget I said anything about at Sharp and Hot. If we ever get this resolved, I will let you know. But until then, if you could all follow the legions of fans headed over to at Chef Emily P, which is where I've actually already got an established Twitter presence. And more importantly, I know my password. And since I can't quit Twitter, unlike Yelp, which I quit after a disagreement about filtering my reviews, but that's a whole different story. So I'm not on Yelp anymore, but I am on Twitter at Chef Emily P. So follow me there. A little housekeeping out of the way. I guess I have to acknowledge that the problem between Yelp and Twitter, the common element here is me. So maybe I'm the problem, but I'm going to try to be better. Maybe they'll try to be better. Maybe one of their bots can explain to me how to get my password back. Either way, okay, at Chef Emily P, your direct line with me via the Twitter. So the other thing that I wanted to talk about at the top of the show is how to eat meat, because I get asked this question a lot, and I'm going to give you my honest and straightforward approach to confronting the agricultural industrial complex in terms of being a carnivore and how I go about making informed decisions without sounding like a pretentious jerk, which is surprisingly easy line to walk if you just follow a couple basic rules. And the first one is to acknowledge that you're never going to be perfect at it. I am not perfect at not eating commodity meat. No one, literally no one is, unless you are living out in the woods and you are hunting and raising and canning and doing all of your own freezing and butchering and everything. And those people are so few and far between that the majority of the ears that this is reaching, that's not you, right? So you are a normal person who lives in the normal world who's trying to make better, more informed decisions about how to eat. So in not being perfect, like a single trip to McDonald's, or I should say a single road trip makes me want to go to McDonald's so badly. I don't know if it's from being a little kid or being in the backseat of a car. There's something about like, we're getting on the road, let's get some French fries. So I acknowledge that I have that problem as well. Side note, the other thing that makes me want to go to McDonald's is a long night of drinking, which also makes me want seltzer. Have you ever asked for seltzer at McDonald's? Because they don't have it. And if you've been drinking, the obvious thing to tell the guy behind the window is that, no, there's like a little tab right next to the Sprite. And they will tell you, lady, we don't have it. So don't try to explain it to them because they don't think that you're nearly as funny as you do after a couple of glasses of Pinot Grigio. So they don't like it. But that's totally irrelevant as you're listening to me about to tell you how to stop eating commodity meat altogether. So about a year ago, my husband and I decided to do just that, to stop eating what we were calling commodity meat, specifically of the four-legged variety. And it's actually pretty simple to do. The first step is don't buy meat in the supermarket. That goes for anything with four legs. So in the supermarket, your choices are beef and pork. And while you're at it, don't buy four-legged meat anywhere else, unless you are at a restaurant where you know they are using farm-raised meat bought directly from a farmer, or from the farmer's market where the farmer has a representation, or anywhere else. So the rule of thumb is if it's fluorescently lit, you probably shouldn't be buying it. But that's like a hard rule to follow, right? Because it's so cheap. You go to the supermarket and you're standing there and you're trying to figure out what's for dinner, and there's pork chops and they're $3.99 a pound, and that's so cheap. You're like, all right, well, it's just one pork chop, right? Just one dinner. The problem is that they're not really $3.99 a pound, which is one thing, but they also aren't all that delicious when you start to really like take a minute and look at them. They're like pale and poorly lit, and they're wrapped in styrofoam and plastic, which is, you know, how meat comes, and that's how we're used to it. And you're like, yeah, but it's only $3.99 a pound. I'm like, yeah, I know. The problem is that it's not really $3.99 a pound. It actually costs a whole lot more than that to raise a pig to slaughter size. And so because of a very tangled web of government subsidies and interventions and cutting feed with things that pigs in the natural world would have never chosen to eat, like corn, and totally shafting family farmers of giving them a fair price per pound, then that's how you get $3.99 pork chops in the store. So it's like, yeah, it's $3.99 a pound, but now it doesn't look that great. And it certainly doesn't sound that great, because you don't want to be the person who's like shafting American small farms, right? So I can picture myself. I'm standing in the supermarket making this decision, and it becomes easier and easier to say, hey, how'd that pig get here? But the marketing and the supermarkets have made it super convenient, because no one's asking that question because we're hungry and we're broke and we want to get dinner on the table. And so we have like a very small window to go to the store, sometimes with a kid strapped to you or maybe two. And you're like, no, it's $3.99 for pork chops. The problem is that once you start thinking about how that pig got here, it's not actually that delicious. And if you're about to eat something that's going to make up cells that are literally going to be part of your body forever, and you're going to carry it with you forever, and you take just 1 second to be like, do I really want that pork chop to be part of my cells forever? Then suddenly it's like, oh, well, maybe not. Maybe we could pick something else, which is why I said in the beginning that I've only given up four-legged commodity meat, because this still gives me a window to eat some chicken or other protein, because it's something that I love, and that's something that I'm going to, you know, eat as an omnivore and a carnivore when I go to the supermarket, because I am a normal American. I need to give myself something, because lentils alone will not sustain me. But if you start with the four-legged variety, you will go a long way to making that change in your own life and hopefully how you feel about your impact on the universe. So the other thing to know about pigs is that if it wasn't for people eating them, they would have disappeared a long time ago. If you've ever been around more than one pig, particularly more than one male pig, they're mean and they require a ton of energy and a ton of oversight. And left to their own devices, they would not have just been romping around in the forest and, you know, eating twigs and berries, waiting for some scavenger to come along and hunt them. Humans stepped in, realizing that they are in fact delicious, and domesticated them into specifically a food product, not a pet. They are a food product, which, and like any other food product, you can buy cheap or you can buy good, but you really can't buy both. You can buy humane and you can buy delicious, or you can buy convenient and you can buy, it's there right now and it's $3.99 a pound. But you can't have it both ways, not at this point in the way that our food system is set up. So what is an eater to do? First of all, you want to find a farm that grows pigs. If you have a farmer's market near you, which many, 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 many people do now, thanks to the relatively new explosion of farmer's market and easy access to farm-grown meat, find a farmer that sells pigs and sells beef. they will be more than happy to talk to you about how they raise their animals and what they fed them and what their life was like and all of the stuff that you can't ask in the supermarket because people will look at you like you're weird. Also, when you're at a party and somebody's serving sausage or pork chops or pork loin, whatever, just eat it. Don't be a jerk. There's no need to be like, oh, I don't eat commodity meat right now. Just keep that to yourself because you're not going to forever never eat commodity meat again. It's going to happen. And when you're at your friend's house and somebody's invited you over, then the gracious thing to do is to eat it. But when you're making your own decisions with your own dollars, you go to your farmer's market and you say, I would like to buy your pork because I believe that I want 100% of my dollars to go into the pocket of that farmer. Your other option, which is maybe more convenient if you, whether or not you live near a farmer's market, is to go to heritagefoodsusa.com and they will literally mail you meat. You can click around just like you're on Amazon, pick out what you want, and they will mail it to you and it will be delivered in a box so beautifully packaged at your door and you don't have to really think about anything. It's especially easy if you have a chest freezer. Buy a bunch all at once because they have some, you know, they won't charge you shipping if they're shipping you a lot of stuff. And then you'll have all the meat you need in your basement. And you won't have to be confronted with the, do I have to buy this commodity pork chop situation. It will not, at the farmer's market or at heritagemeatsusa.com, it will not be $3.99 a pound. I can tell you that. But it shouldn't be. An animal shouldn't be $3.99 a pound. The pig is worth it. The farmers are worth it. Your money is worth it. Your health and the planet are worth it. Your questions after this.
When alone I pass the hours thinking of the day.
You're listening to Bedside Window by the California Honey Drops on the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Stay tuned for more from Sharp and Hot.
As though we'd never said goodbye. And I recall a summer pleasant, spent sweet in love's embrace. And when I hear the roll of thunder, in my mind I see the place. There was a window by
Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, pasture raised on 150,000 acres in Central California. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, free-range, sustainably produced, humane. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, the authentic flavor of the American West.
How perfect that advertising tie-in was right there. Who knew? Okay, so this week we have some questions. If you have questions, which I'm sure you do, which is why you're listening to this, there are a variety of ways that you can get at me, and I will answer them in turn. You can tweet me, as we discussed, at Chef Emily P. You can go to facebook.com/sharpandhot. You can go to sharpandhot.com, or you can call in 862-242-8599. It's a dedicated voicemail line. I won't accidentally pick up. And you can leave your question that way, and we will play it on air, like this one from Megan.
Hey, Chef Emily. This is Megan. I'm calling from Stamford, Connecticut. I have a question about stone fruits. If the peaches at my local market are from Georgia, but they're sweet and delicious, but not local, does it make sense to can them? Thank you.
So the question is it worth canning fruit, or let's say anything, is it worth preserving fruit, tomatoes, whatever, if they're not locally grown? So ideally, you would be canning the stuff that you grow. Second best would be you're canning local stuff. So this weekend, we went to a party at a friend's house. She had a canapalooza, and we all chopped tomatoes and washed tomatoes and boiled tomatoes. We put them in a pot. We spun them through this mechanized grinder where tomato paste shot everywhere. We ate polenta for lunch with some of our fresh tomato sauce on it, and it was awesome and fun and wonderful. It was very pastoral. But if you can't do that, Because let's say you don't have access to fresh fruit, like you live in Baxter, Maine, and your peaches are non-existent or not great. But the ones in the supermarket that are from Georgia are perfuming the whole entry to the store. And you're like, oh my God, these peaches are so good. And I'll tell you, their store by me, I don't know what where they're getting their peaches from, but they are unlike the peaches in any other of the local supermarkets, and they are amazing. So does it make sense to can them? I'm totally a pragmatist about this stuff. I say can them. Because the thing is, nobody's going to have good peaches in February. So in February, when you want good peaches, are you going to say, man, I really wish that I hadn't canned these peaches from Georgia? The whole point is to preserve the harvest at the time when everything's really, really good. And so if you can get really good peaches in your supermarket and you have the energy to can them and you have the space to put them up, I say go ahead and can them.
Hi, Chef Emily. This is Scott from New York City. I think I'm addicted to soda. I've been trying to quit, and I'm still terrified of the number of cans that are collecting in my recycling bin. So I was wondering if you have any tips on how to break the habit. Thanks.
So we got personal last week, and we'll get personal again this week. I will tell you that I am totally an addict. I understand having an addictive personality, and I know exactly what it feels like to be addicted to something. I smoked for 15 years, but I managed to quit. However, I know exactly what it feels like to be like, and soda is like not that bad, right? It's not as bad as smoking. But here's what I did. First of all, on an emotional level, I took real stock of what I was doing to my body and the permissions that I was giving myself around smoking cigarettes. It was glamorous. I've literally said out loud, it's part of who I am. Like, this is just part of who I am. I have said things like, it's not that bad. I've said things like, I don't smoke that much. My rule was I didn't start smoking until I started drinking for the night. So I've had a glass of wine, then I had a cigarette. And then I realized I was actually smoking 10 or 12 or 15 cigarettes, but only in the span of 3 or 4 hours. My favorite was, no one wants to live those last few years of their life anyway. And that is the talk, like the inner conversation of a real addict. Smoking is so shamed now, but drinking soda, it's totally normal. And chef, you would say, it's not that bad, right? It's not as bad as smoking, right? Totally wrong. However, more research has gone into the long-term effects of smoking. And now we know, yep, no question, smoking will kill you if that's what you choose to do. However, soda at this point has not been the focus. And so up until recently, no one's been studying the effects of soda. However, I looked this up. Georgetown University, starting in 1993, watched 42,000 people divided into two groups. Those that drank less than two sodas a week, two sodas a whole week, and those who drank more than that. You want to know the scary results? Pancreatic cancer in those people doubled from just two sodas a week. They controlled for everything else. They controlled for family history. They controlled for smoking, diabetes, and lifestyle, and all that other stuff. I probably drink two sodas a week at this point, and I don't think of myself as somebody who drinks soda. So as you are standing at the vending machine or in the supermarket buying your, you know, 4 12 packs because they're four for $4 or whatever, what you need to think about is it's not nothing. Smoking, my mother was told to smoke while she was pregnant with me because the doctor thought that quitting would be more stressful for the baby than for her to just continue smoking, but she should probably switch over to less tar. And that was only 34 years ago. So I love soda more than the next person, like as much as the next person, but it's not one of the things I'm addicted to, but this is what you have to do. When I was quitting, I looked at myself in the mirror and I asked that smoking self, that drinking soda self, that person that I was not thrilled with their decisions, and I'd come to a point of like, I'm ready to make a change. And I looked at that person in the mirror and I thought, would I treat someone that I really, really loved? Would I do that to them? Would I like force feed them soda or cigarettes over the course of a couple of hours because I thought it was good for them, or because I could explain away that it wasn't that bad, or I looked really glamorous, or it was just part of who I am? I wouldn't do that to anybody. So then I started thinking, and it's going to sound a little bit cheesy, but it's true. But I decided to love myself as much as I love those other people and be like, I'm just not going to do that to myself. And I quit just like that. It wasn't just like that. It took about 6 tries and 6 solid months of real, real pain and depression. And it was awful because I was mourning this loss. But that's just part of it. That's just part of what you're going to get through. And you're going to get through it. Practically, there was no substitute at the time when I was quitting smoking. E-cigarettes were not the rage that they are now. And so I just went cold turkey. Soda lovers, however, you have a ton of options that aren't soda. Sitting on my counter, not a sponsor of the show, I have a Soda Stream, and I love it. It makes seltzer, take that, McDonald's, it makes seltzer as finely or coarsely bubbled as you want from your tap water. So you just fill up a little bottle, you put it on the little siphon thing that's connected to a CO2 cartridge, you push the button a couple of times, sometimes you push it 1 or 2 times if you want just like a little spritz, or like press it 10 or 12 times, and you'll get really big soda bubbles. And then you have a base for making your own soda. You can put in just like lemon and some smushed up mint or smushed up cucumber and call it spa water. You can Google homemade Coke or homemade Dr. Pepper or homemade Diet Dr. Pepper. And there are literally millions of DIYers out there who have written recipes that are like, here, try this. It's basically just some cherry extract and a lime and some black pepper. Make a ginger simple syrup. So easy. Equal parts. Let's say 1 cup sugar, 1 cup water, and a chunk of ginger, I don't know, about the size of your hand that you kind of roughly chop. Put that all into a saucepan. Turn it up to simmer. When all the sugar's dissolved, turn it off. Let it get cold again, back to room temperature. Strain it. And now you have ginger simple syrup, and you can make your own ginger ale. It's not the same. It's totally not the same. But it's not going to give you pancreatic cancer. Okay, so that said, let's end on a light note.
Hi, Chef Emily. This is Keith from Denville, New Jersey, and I was wondering why celery gets rubbery and how I could prevent that. Thanks.
So I've had the experience of limp celery. I think everyone's had the experience of limp celery. Here's what happens. Celery, like any other stalk, like flowers, for instance, need water. And what keeps them rigid is that their cells are filled with water pressing up against each other, and that holds the plant upright. So just like you bring home a bouquet of flowers, cut off the end and stick it in a vase, do the same thing with your celery once you start using it. If you bring it home from the supermarket and it's in its kind of plastic sheath, stick that in the refrigerator until you're ready to use it. When you pull it out, if it's limp, make a fresh cut on the bottom and then stick it into a cup of cold water. Alternately, you can chop it up however, whatever size you want to use it. Soak that all in some water, and in like 10 minutes, your celery will be refreshed. In the refrigerator, it actually happens faster that it loses water because the refrigerator is a dry environment, a low humidity environment, which is why the drawers have those slider things for fruits and vegetables on the bottom, which I've never noticed any appreciable difference, but I have a really old refrigerator. But cut it off at the bottom, stick it in a cup of water, and it will pull the water back up again, filling back up with water, and you will have more delicious, crisp, and refreshing celery. Okay, so let's see. Last week I introduced the question of the week, and I asked you what your biggest culinary fear was. This is insightful for me because I've gotten some people who called in, and I picked one that I really found fascinating, and I'm going to play it for you right now. Let's see. I'm working on my technology here. Oh, there it is.
Hi, Chef Emily. This is Dina from Randolph, New Jersey. And my biggest culinary fear is that I've always wanted to make brisket for my family, since it's one of my absolute favorites. And I am very intimidated by figuring out how to cut it correctly and how to understand which side is the grainy side. Okay, thank you.
Dina, it makes me so sad that the fear of how to cut your finished product is the thing that's keeping you from making your favorite family dish. You didn't even ask me about the recipe about how to cook it. So that part, I'm going to assume you've got down. You know how to cook it. It's the getting it to the cutting board and knowing which way to cut it. you hear a lot of people say you cut against the grain. So if you think of a piece of fabric, it has, or like a piece of canvas, there's a grid. There's lines going in one direction and lines going in the other direction. If you look at a cut of meat, particularly brisket, that has a lot of grain to it, you'll see the lines on the meat. Or you won't, because you're looking at your brisket and you're like, I've been doing this for 30 years and I don't see it. Just slice it. It's not going to make the difference between totally amazing, delicious on the cover of Savour magazine and this is inedible, I can't believe you invited me over for dinner. It's not going to happen. No matter what you do, you're going to eat it and you're going to be like, this is so good. And everybody's going to be having a glass of wine and passing around mashed potatoes and gravy. And that's what's going to make your brisket amazing. If you really want to learn about cutting against the grain or with the grain, brisket's actually a really good place to start because the grain is so obvious. Make a cut. It should look like the... You shouldn't see any long lines of meat. Whereas if you cut with the grain, you will see the muscle fibers are all lined up and you'll see that you're cut. So if that's the case, make a slice. All the muscle fibers are lined up and you're seeing lines. Rotate your cutting board with the steak on it 90 degrees and cut again. Now, I've heard certain celebrity chefs that I admire say cut with the grain because that actually makes it more tender because the muscle fibers are more easily pulled apart by your teeth. So I don't think there's a right answer. I definitely don't think that it's the thing that should keep you from cooking this amazing dish that you love. Okay, now mine. My biggest fear, it's not entirely culinary because there's not a lot of stuff left in the culinary world that truly scares me. What I'm terrified of is losing the ability to chew. I've actually had nightmares where my teeth have all fallen out and I can't chew. I think it's probably rooted in that last year I had a root canal and I had to eat through off of a spoon just for one weekend, for 2 days. And I had mashed potatoes and oatmeal for pretty much every meal and it was awful. It was so awful. I thought this could slowly drive me insane. If I'm ever taken by the North Koreans and they want answers, a steady diet of mush and maybe plucking my eyebrows. That will drive me insane. And I will tell you that I don't know anything. If North Korea is listening, I'm not worth picking up. But if you want to drive me insane, losing my ability to chew is my deepest, darkest culinary fear. Okay, so that brings us to this week's question. I want to know, what is the best meal, whole meal, the best meal you have ever had? You can tweet me at Chef Emily P, Facebook.com/sharpandhot.com. Call in the unstaffed voicemail line, 862-242-8599 or sharpandhot.com. You are listening to Chef Emily Peterson. That's me on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find more about us at heritageradionetwork.org. And I can't wait to hear your answers and answer more questions next week.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.